the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. We got the entomologist back in the house today, and they're going to be talking three-cornered alfalfa hoppers and bean leaf beetles, two things that have really picked up in the last week or so in soybeans. And Mr. Soybean Entomologist Don Cook over here is going to tell us a little bit about those hoppers.
Yeah, there's quite a few hoppers in some of these fields. We've done a lot of work in the last, 10 years on them, and from that work, we've substantially raised our threshold after, the seedling stage.
So, the first time I ever heard y'all talk about three-cornered alfalfa hoppers, and I just got to throw this out here, is when some guys planted soybeans behind corn, and they just moved in and devastated them that year.
Yes. The seedling stage, you can have some major issues. They'll girdle the main stem, about half to an inch above the soil line, and either immediately they can kill the plants, or down the road there's a girdle that will form, and it's a weak point, and you get some wind or you go through there with equipment and it breaks off. The plant breaks off.
But right now we're in late season soybeans. So Angus, what are you seeing these hoppers do to late season soybeans?
Well, like Don said, we've worked on this extensively over the years. In fact, we had two different master student work on this same project, and LSU did some of the same work, because all the old literature would suggest that they can be a pest, but we just weren't seeing it. And that's why we put somebody on the project. And honestly, no matter about how many you could put on there or when you put them on there, what growth stage, once the beans got over about 10 inches tall, we've never really been able to show a yield loss.
So you're basically saying don't worry about alfalfa hoppers and late season beans.
Well, we can't cover every situation when we do this stuff. I mean, we did the best we could, but again, the work was extensive. And rather than just rule them out 100% completely, like Don said, we raised the threshold substantially from one per 25 sweeps, one per sweep to four per individual sweep. So we went from 25 per 100 sweeps to 100.
That's pretty good.
No, we went from 25 per 25 sweeps to 100 per 25 sweeps.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's right.
All right, so y'all know out there why we have three entomologists in a room, because they don't even know what their own threshold levels are.
Well, I said it wrong. I just did the math wrong in my head. I think about things in sets of 25. It was one per sweep. Now it's four per sweep.
So what we've learned is Angus is no mathematician.
We've all knew that for a long time.
I can't do it without a calculator either, brother. But going back to these alfalfa hoppers and your grad students working with them, I was looking, we had a big windstorm come up, 7 inches of rain in Stoneville, and had a lot of soybeans snap over. Is any of that type of feeding could influence lodging at all?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things with wind that can impact soybeans lodging, especially when we get a lot of wind. But definitely it could have been a lot of early season three-cornered alfalfa hopper injury that is causing a lot of that now.
Well, I look at a lot of soybeans, and especially these late group fours that grow so fast, you see a lot of split stems and a lot of stem damage, just normal. And then you have a pest like this that you see in high numbers, but it's really not causing significant injury late season, but something that happened early in the season that you wouldn't pay any attention to could maybe hurt you in the end.
Yeah, and you can look at those plants and kind of tell if it was from three-cornered alfalfa hoppers, because you can still see that girdle. It'll just be a thick, swollen area on that main stem just right above the soil line.
Now, here's the thing, though. You got to remember, a plant that is girdled and is calloused over, if in the absence of lodging, those plants go on and produce normal yields. So it's like Don mentioned earlier. I mean, if you get a thin stand, you got some wind or something like that, it can be an issue. But again, we're just not really worrying about them a whole lot, to be quite honest with you, once we get over about 10 or 12 inches tall.
Okay, so since we got out of that way, now we can move to more of the leaf-feeding insects and the bean leaf beetles. We talked last week a lot about loopers, and they feed on leaves. How, if you see leaves all messed up in a field with holes in them, can you tell the difference in what you have?
Yeah, the damage symptoms are fairly distinctive. It's almost, they're not perfect holes, but they're ragged circular holes in the leaves. And it's with bean leaf beetles, and it's going to be pretty much confined to the top third to top quarter of the plant where loopers start lower in the canopy. And if when they really get going, all you have left is leaf veins, and they work their way up.
And what would a looper look like, Angus?
Well, a lot of times with loopers, you'll see more of a window painting when they're starting. And like Don said, they start in the bottom and they move up. Bean leaf beetles tend to start in the top and they'll kind of move down if they eat that much foliage.
So if you meet in the middle, you got a problem.
You meet in the middle, yep. Yeah.
And you know, if you're not to the point where you have nothing but leaf veins left and you have holes, they'll be much more irregular shape than bean leaf beetles. And that's, you know, I mean, that doesn't hold true all the time, but, you know, that's kind of an indication. I've looked at enough that I can almost look at the whole leaf and say, okay, that's beetles, that's loopers. I mean,
all right, so when we're talking about, go ahead, Jeff. I don't want to cut off what you were going to say.
The thing about bean leaf beetles, too, is especially comparing it to soybean looper, is that it takes a lot of bean leaf beetles to cause an equivalent amount of defoliation is what you would see with soybean loopers.
So I can give you a good example about this too, an anecdotal deal. You know, we chase bean leaf beetles around, and we can talk about this a minute, but Mississippi again wins the trophy for resistance in bean leaf beetles. We've got documented resistance to pyrethroids with bean leaf beetles. But nevertheless, when we were doing all this work about 10 years ago, I caught a field of fours drying down, and I was putting some trials out in some fives. They were moving into the fives. And when I went out there, we were running roughly about 150 per 25 sweeps. And back then, we had a numbers threshold of 50 per 20. So we had a 3X threshold in the field. And I was back there for several weeks, and it took a 3X threshold at the time when we had a numbers threshold about 12 to 13 days to get from almost no defoliation to the 20% threshold. So the point is, they are slower, like Jeff said, but you got some time to react.
All right, so let's go back with what you said, and that's what I was going to ask before Jeff chimed in a while ago. You talked about loopers having dual modes of thresholds, and I think you just mentioned a visual threshold for the bean leaf beetles, but not numbers. So where are you at on textbook threshold for bean leaf beetle in Mississippi?
So we did away with the numbers threshold. Like I said, it used to be 20% defoliation or 50 per 25 sweeps. But what we found is they keep moving into fields. When you get into about the third week of July to where we are now, they'll just roll into these fields. And if you're just using a numbers threshold, before you know it, you'd have three sprays for bean leaf beetles and never got over 5% defoliation. So that just didn't make sense. And because of that, we made the decision that we would go strictly on defoliation because that's where the yield loss is coming from.
Yeah, what you see this time of year is that there's bean leaf beetles out there, and they've been out in soybeans all year. But the bulk of our beans right now are getting to that R7 stage, starting to turn yellow. And so you got these beans that are scattered, these bean leaf beetles that are scattered across a bunch of acres that are starting to move in to a few acres of those beans that are still green.
So basically, you got a green bridge from one crop to the next.
Yeah, kind of like the stink bugs and everything else are doing. As we start taking these older beans out, they're going to be moving to what's greener, and that's where they're going to congregate.
Yeah, it's a concentration thing. The later you get is more mature, you're just concentrating the same number of insects into a smaller area.
And so when you walk through a field and you see a lot of bean leaf beetles, you really don't need to be looking at them, was what you said. No numbers issue. Look strictly at plant defoliation.
Well, I'm not.
Well, there needs to be some there.
Yeah, you need to be looking, but the defoliation is what causes the yield loss at least 95% of the time. They will occasionally move down and feed on pods. Now, we don't see that a lot, and we don't know when they're going to do it. I mean, sometimes they do it, and there's plenty of leaves left on the plant, and sometimes it's when the leaves are gone. They'll move down and feed on pods, but we don't see that as much as we do the general leaf feed.
So talking about this, it seems like bean leaf beetle is more of a secondary pest. It's not one of your primary pests you're targeting in soybean.
I don't know if I would say that. I mean, there are I don't know. No, I don't think I'd say that at all. It's something that we deal with on some acres every year. It just depends on to what extent we deal with them every year. I don't worry about them like I worry about some other things, except they're harder to control because we mentioned the resistance now. So it's not as easy as a call as it used to be.
Okay, so you brought up that resistance. Jeff, you've been in Mississippi a long time. When this resistance first started, how did y'all recognize it, and how long did it take to build to the level we're at today?
Well, Angus really kind of took the lead on that, he and Fred Musser, so I'll just let him jump in on that.
So, I mean, you used to could open a jug of pyrethroid on the turn row and bean leaf beetles would fall out dead. I mean, that's how easy they were. So
yeah,
we kind
of like me. That's why I'm not entomologist.
Well, that's why we used to not worry about bean leaf beetles because they were so easy to control. It's the fact that when we started getting all these calls, you know, at full rates of pyrethroids, maybe going after stink bugs or whatever else, we were leaving a lot of bean leaf beetles. And that led to a lot of that work back then. We needed to figure out what was going on. And we figured out real quickly that we were not getting the level of control that we once did. It wasn't even near that. In fact, we had some pretty high levels of resistance in the Delta. Now that has spread essentially throughout the whole Mid-South.
I could have said that, but I didn't want to steal Angus's thunder.
That would have been okay. We talk every day. We're all on the same page with all this stuff.
Like I said a while ago, it takes three of y'all to get one story straight.
That's right.
And, you know, we still, in our some of the trials we run, we have pyrethroids, and I've got one ongoing right now, and pyrethroids are still not good. So there's really not been that much reversion.
That's what really made that defoliation threshold important is when we could kill bean leaf beetles with a couple dollars worth of a pyrethroid, you know, that threshold naturally would be a lot lower. Or not necessarily the threshold would be lower, but it was a lot less concern when you could spray a cheap pyrethroid and take out bean leaf beetles, a few three-cornered alfalfa hoppers that were out there. Plus, you know, several other things, stink bugs, whatever.
And back then, you know, we really didn't have that much resistance in pyrethroids and bollworm, so you weren't as concerned about flaring those as well.
So what do you think caused the resistance?
Selection.
Overuse. I mean, we use a lot of pyrethroids, and you expose the whole population to it. What's out there is going to start getting, you know, more prevalent across the landscape. That's what we see just about with any pest we deal with.
Just kind of like Jeff said, it's cheap. Let's throw it in the tank.
Yeah.
Well, not just that. I mean, the useful life, you know, with no major resistance issues for pyrethroids has actually been pretty long. I mean, first pyrethroid became commercial in like 1978.
But it complicates things though again, because like we talked about, I think last week or the last podcast, that loopers change your insecticide choice because of resistance. Now we're doing that now with bean leaf beetles. We have to go to other stuff or at least combinations.
I got you. Well, I heard you mention a while ago when you were talking about pyrethroid resistance and how we used to manage for bean leaf beetles. You mentioned the word stink bug. I know last year red bandeds were a hot topic. Where are we at this year? I know y'all do surveys and been running up all around the Delta. What are you seeing? What are you hearing from consultants?
On red bandeds?
Yeah.
I mean, every week I get a call or two. I found a few. We've sprayed at least a couple fields, but I would say it's nothing major right now. I mean, I was in beans the day that I sprayed last week. It was some test plot stuff, but I had quite a few in there, and there was quite a few back in there today. A few people are finding some, but it's not anything I'm terribly concerned about right now. But I do think probably the latest planted beans that we have may have a spray or two. We'll just have to see as these beans dry down. Just same concept we talked about with bean leaf beetles. They're going to be congregating to the greener stuff. We'll just have to see that.
And that's going to be highly variable because I was in some late planted beans this morning. I've not seen one in there yet.
Yeah, so location's going to matter.
Silent one, what have you seen?
Well, you know, the thing about that, I mean, basically what they said is the same thing that I've seen and heard. But how did I know that you were talking about me when you said silent one?
Look, it's okay if you're silent. I talk a lot, but when Jeff says something, everybody listens to him because he don't say it a lot. But when he says it, it makes a lot of sense.
But what this means, though, is that you know, we're setting up really for next year by having populations moving up into the Delta regions and further north in the state. And, you know, so this is really going to make us keep an eye on the winter conditions, whether or not it gets cold enough this winter to knock them back again. If it doesn't, we're set up next year to have a pretty significant red-banded problem.
Yeah. So you feel we had a pretty good winter last year to reduce the risk this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the sole reason we're seeing what we're seeing this year.
Pretty evident from what we've seen. You know, this time last year, guys had 1 to 3 applications already and over big acres, and right now we've got a handful of acres that may have gotten one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about red banded some, and maybe in 3 weeks we'll have this conversation again in depth, but we do probably need to go you know, kind of back to bean leaf beetles and maybe talk about some of the insecticides that we are recommending, since we talked about what we're not recommending.
Sounds like a plan. So what do you recommend, Angus?
All right, well,
my first choice, and a lot of people may shy away from it because of price, is Carbaryl, or everybody knows it as 7, is Jam Up. But you better not have a rain anytime near after the time you put it out, because it'll wash off in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's actually really good. When you say 7, people laugh, but it costs a lot. It does still cost a lot, and the pest spectrum is not as big, but it still is a really good bean leaf beetle product. But nobody keeps it on the shelf unless you got tomatoes in the garden.
Well, that's what I was going to say. My granddaddy would have said, "Man, that stuff don't work in the garden. How's it going to work in the field?"
Yeah. Probably the most common thing, there's several things, but probably the most common thing is, again, a mixture of acephate and bifenthrin. Neither one alone are great, but the two together do a pretty good job. Nothing holds them very long, but that's probably the go-to, just in case you do got some other stink bugs and other stuff in the field. It's more well-rounded.
I got you. So you're a 7 guy, Don. You're a orthane guy, Angus. What are you, Jeff?
I would say the orthane pyrethroid. That's going to be the most, it's going to be the easiest to get your hands on and probably the cheapest option.
Well, and here's the thing you need to remember, though, is that combination that we talked about. Orthane alone, there's not resistance to it, but a half a pound of orthane has always been about 60% control. You bump that up to 3/4 of a pound active, or 8/10 product roughly, and it goes up to about 80 or 85. Going all the way to a pound, don't move that needle much at that point. So I'd rather see some lower rates of the acephate with the pyrethroid, and we get better control of both.
Yeah.
Indigo. I mean, indigo's an option as well.
That has worked well.
And here recently, and actually Gus Lorenz kind of figured this out, you know, in some trials recently, and Don and I have looked at it. Belay actually has a pretty good, looks pretty dang good on bean leaf beetles, but I made that recommendation to a guy this morning. He couldn't find any. So it just depends, you know, where you're at. But there's a few things out there, but the list is not long.
Well, we'll get on the guys if they can't find Belay. I know a man that can fix that problem for them.
Yeah, like they said, bifenthrin orthane is probably the most common treatment. But, you know, somebody asked me pretty much what's the standard. You know, strictly for bean leaf beetles, I'd probably have to go with 7, but I completely understand the bifenthrin orthane mixture.
So I'm not an entomologist. Bifenthrin and orthane, you're mixing multiple modes of action. You're reducing the chance of resistance, or is there some synergism there?
Well, I think we went into this whole synergism additive thing maybe 3 or 4 of these ago. I think it's probably additive in this effect, because neither one of them are great, but you put the two together, this is probably additive. I'm really not sure, but what I do know is it works pretty good.
And it's really just a Band-Aid. When you have resistance to both, right, and, you know, you mix them together.
You get a portion of the population with one and a portion with the other.
Yeah, who knows how long that's going to last.
But hopefully, you know, in the foreseeable future, we're not treating a whole lot of bean leaf beetles.
Yeah, hopefully. But, you know, this year seems to be a lot more of them than last year. And every couple of years they pop up in really big numbers. The reason, and I'll never forget when they start every year, the third week of July, because that's typically when we're at the MAIC, and that's when the phone starts ringing about bean leaf beetles.
Right. You know, and I've actually encountered a horrific issue with them when I was back in school in Arkansas. We had some soybeans that were in a spot, and, you know, traveling from Fayetteville downstate, we didn't get to see them every week. And, man, they were beautiful. And then the next week we went down there, and they had completely annihilated those soybeans in about 8 days. So I'm probably the same time you were seeing those big ones back 10 years ago.
Yeah. But, you know, consultants are checking beans essentially once a week. And my point is when you're running 20 to 30 in a sweep net and 25 sweeps, I mean, it seems like a lot, and that is a lot because there's a lot of stuff running around in there. But that example that I give about it took 150 per 25 sweeps, 12 days, you don't have to get scared because you ain't going to be back for a week. You have some time to react, especially if you're running 2 to 3% defoliation. You can wait till that next check and see what happens.
I got you. What you got for us, Jeff? I see you making hand motions over there.
No, I was just telling Angus that we were about at 20 minutes, so we probably want to start wrapping up.
Well, you didn't have to say when we're going to wrap up, so I guess now we need to wrap up since Jeff
well,
said.
Well, we don't have to.
Oh, no. You done called the quits on it. So
well, we can go another 20 minutes. Angus likes to talk.
Well, bean leaf beetles is one of the things that I spent a bunch of years on. It's one of the, I mean, I chased these things all around this place for a long time.
You got a fire in your belly about the bean leaf
beetles. Yeah, I do. It's fun to talk about the stuff that you dealt a lot with in the past.
Oh, I agree. Well, Don, you've been quiet since you mentioned seven last time. What do you got to part with on us?
Not a whole lot other than, you know, it's just because you got some beetles out there, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it's you may have to deal with them. Chances are you may not. So just don't be overly concerned with them.
You know, the big question I have in my mind right now is, is Urban Meyer going to get fired or is he going to get suspended? What's going to happen with that?
We need to call the graduate students in here to answer that question. Yeah. They can tell you everything you want to know about any sports event anywhere. I worry about dove hunting and all that when this thing ends, not football too much anymore.
I like to listen to ESPN radio, but I'm sick of it because all I hear about is Urban Meyer.
You just need to go SEC.
That's exactly. We're ready for some Mississippi State football.
Yeah,
I thought you were ready for Auburn football.
Well, I didn't want to mention that on this podcast.
It'll be okay. Everybody knows where your heart lies, Jeff.
That's right.
All right, guys. Well, we sure appreciate you joining in for the episode of Mississippi Crop Podcast with the three entomologists. I always say dynamic duo, but it's a terrific trio, right? But look, if y'all have any questions about anything we say or y'all need us to come look at a field, just give us a shout. We'll get there as quick as we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.